Therapy Podcast. I am Sarah McDowling and I am very pleased to be here today with the always delightful Mr. Garth Nix and my delightful also co-worker Bronwyn Ely.
Hi.
Hello, it's great to be here again.
So you are here today to talk to us about what has to be my favourite read of the year so far.
It is and only February.
The year is but short.
Thank you.
But no, it's a high benchmark to pass. Yeah.
Good.
It's like February.
No, I still think it's 2016, honestly.
My favourite read in a long time. Like,
thank you.
One of the best books I've read in a long time, and I think will be hard to displace this year. Frog Kisser! Exclamation mark.
You must remember the exclamation. Frog Kisser!
Frog Kisser!
Frog Kisser!
Is this the Gerald the Herald way I'm imagining saying this?
Absolutely. Gerald the Herald's speaking all in announcements. Yep.
So, Garth, could you tell us a little bit about Frog Kisser and where the first little spark of inspiration came from for this book?
It's always really hard to tell where sparks of inspiration come from. Frog Kisser actually began on a plane. I can't remember where I was flying back from somewhere. And I started just making some notes. And then I wrote the first chapter. And I thought it was going to be one of those things, which I often do. I often start stories not knowing what they're going to be. And it might be a short story, it might be an idea for a screenplay, or it could be, who knows what it's going to be. It could even be a poem. And I start them and often I then put them aside because I have to focus on what my next main project is or the main project I'm doing. And with Frog Kisser, what happened was I had this idea for this sort of fairy tale story. I thought of a princess who is in a very small kingdom, and her older sister basically attracts princes like they're going out of style, and they have a horrible stepfather because they have two step-parents who's a sorcerer who turns one of her sister's princes into a frog, and they need to turn him back. And I guess I was thinking about fairy tales and wanting to just turn things around and change them and just have fun with them, I suppose. When I got back, I did put that first chapter away, but then I got it out again like 2 days later, and I basically just wrote the whole rest of the book quite quickly over several months, whereas normally it would have gone away for much longer. And I really love writing. It was one of those books that just demanded to be written. The story just kept coming out, so I kept writing it. I had a tremendous amount of fun with it.
Well, it was a tremendous amount of fun to read. I am like pretty addicted to fairy tales, and I wanted to discuss that with you because I don't understand my own addiction. If it's a fairy tale I'll be telling, if it's a fractured fairy tale, if there's any kind of fairy tale element, I'm like there.
Right, okay.
But why do you think that is? Because I know I'm not alone. I know that...
No, I think it's... I mean, fairy tales, I think, are very, very strong stories. And the reason we like them so much is because they are such strong stories. And sure, we encounter them when we're young, and so they're deeply imprinted in us when we're young. But I think it's more than that. I think they are just very, very pure stories, very strong ones, and they stick with us. And so we're always interested to see variations on a theme. I guess it's like a really memorable tune where it's always interesting to hear a cover of that tune because you love it so much, and you hear someone else do it and you think, it's different, but it's still really fascinating. It's still, or I hate it, but you still want to hear it. And I think that with fairy tales too. I mean, I don't like all fairy tale retellings or reimaginings. Sometimes I really hate them. Mm. But again, I'm interested in them in the same way you are. And I think it's because those fairy tales and folklore and so forth are so strong and so deeply imprinted in us, we're always attracted to them. So I think it's a reflection of both early exposure, but also how strong those narratives are. And often they are about very serious things too, but they're just done in a certain way that makes them appealing and interesting and different.
I'm thinking about all the different types of fairy tales I've read and seen over the years. What made you decide that you wanted to, rather than taking like the serious kind of approach, you wanted to have the fun and have all the tropes and twisting them on their heads and...
I have no idea.
Yeah. So just your humor came out.
Genius.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's why I love it so much. It's just...
Yeah, I think it's actually just... I pretty much always write the books I want to read. I pretty much always write the books I want to read myself. And yeah. I think for whatever reason, I needed that sort of book. I needed this kind of book, Frog Kisser. I needed to write it because I wanted to read it.
Mm. I think we all need this book.
Yeah. And you know, it's, and of course, it's a fairy tale that's... It's not really, even though it's called Frog Kisser, it's about turning a prince from a frog back into a prince, but it's also about turning lots of other people back into humans, because, or in fact, animals from being humans back into animals. So it's about finding true shapes, what you're meant to be. So it's not as a lot of fairy tales and frog kissing tales about finding true love. It's actually not about finding true love, per se, though there is, of course, true love in it. Of course. I guess it's more about finding out who you are, but a lot of it is also about tyranny and fairness. And I think that's very much on everyone's minds at the moment. It's about resisting tyranny in the shape of evil sorcerers, in this case, and also about the rule of law. Re-establishing the rule of law, which has gone missing basically from all these little kingdoms, but I didn't really know that when I was writing it. It just all sort of came together, and afterwards I looked at it and I thought, oh, this is me kind of reacting to some of the things that are going on and that I'm worried about. And I think that's what fairy tales are great at. They tell you hopefully a really great story, and afterwards you think it makes you think about stuff as well. So it's not just that straightforward top level of story, which you love and you inhale and enjoy. It's got more to it as well, and I hope Frog Kisser does as well. Everything just came together with this one.
I think it absolutely does have. It's the kind of book that you would call a delightful romp, and it's like frothy and fun and light and deliciously absurd. But it does have this really like strong message and a great heroine who's like, I loved Anya. Like,
I like Anya too.
I thought she was really great. I thought her growth throughout, she was so relatable, first of all, because I don't know how many times I've not wanted to do something because I'd prefer to stay home and read.
Absolutely.
So I was with her
there.
I think
that applies to all of us, I'm sure. Most book lovers in general.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm like, Quest? Mm. No, I'll stay home and read. But her growth throughout the book was just great. It was amazing to see her become, more responsible and more engaged with the world around her and the people. Mm. And
she was
someone
certain in the beginning, like she wasn't sure if she wanted to be a sorcerer. So she's just sort of, reading about it and sort of not being able to decide. And then it was that quest that just really made her
become strong.
Yeah, and she discovers what being that kind of sorcerer actually means.
Yeah.
Mm. And that's... I guess that it's an interesting story, but I also wanted to. I did want to at the time. It's afterwards I realised that I was also talking about power and what happens to you when you get power and you want more of it, and what it costs, and the Good Wizard, of course, is an example of the balance of trying to balance power, trying to. Trying to recognise that, and I'm always very keen on this, that magic shouldn't be something you can just do and it's totally effortless and doesn't cost anything, because then I think it becomes meaningless and it's not real.
Mm.
It can't feel real. So I never like stories or films where there's effortless magic, where there's no cost involved and there's no consideration of the cost. Everyone's just like, yeah, whatever, they do their magic and it's all fine.
Mm. It's hard to believe in that as well.
Yeah, it's hard to believe it, because it's not real.
Yeah.
Because everything in real life is more complex than that. It's
and
more
has
difficult.
Rules and
yeah.
And that was definitely one of my favourite parts, is that everything had a catch, like the biscuit and the magic carpet. I think was probably my favourite bit.
Lots of fun.
Just picturing people being rolled up in it, like making like sushi or something.
Well,
shooting up into the sky.
That's a sort of long-held thing of mine, is that magic carpets. How do you not fall off a magic carpet? So it actually makes sense, I think, that you would be rolled up in. To fly successfully in one, you need to be rolled up in it.
Because so, why? There's no seatbelt.
No, there's no place to sink into.
Once
fly.
You have seatbelts, the carpet's not right, is it?
No, it has to just be the carpet.
You've spoiled my carpet. You put seatbelts on it.
But I'm sure there's a few scenes in Aladdin when magic carpet goes really fast and he's going on to save his life, that kind of thing.
Well, there is, and of course, as in anything, you can have magic carpets where you can sit on them, and it's perfectly fine. I wanted to do something a little bit different with it. I'm surprised no one's, I mean, maybe someone has done it before, where you get wrapped up in the carpet, but anyway.
I've never heard of it.
Not as far as I know. It just appealed to me. There's a great many things in Frog Kisser which I just like the idea. I just thought this seems right for the story, and I like the, I just like it. So in a way, it's a distillation of many things that I like. And I did mention some of the influences in the back of the book, and I think I certainly do owe a debt to my childhood reading. And I mentioned a few authors, but there's many, many more I could mention. But there's people. My mind, of course. Can I borrow the book? Can I borrow a copy?
Oh,
sorry.
Yeah.
My mind has gone blank, so I'm going to.
When I was reading, I was reminded of the Enchanted Forest series by Patricia C. Reed.
Who wasn't actually one of the people I was thinking of particularly, but of course I did read some of them when I was an adult, though, not as a child.
Yeah.
And absolutely, I think there's a familial resemblance with those, and I like her books a lot. I like many of her books, but the people I particularly thanked as important influences were Lord Alexander, his Chronicles of Prydain, Nicholas Stewart Gray. He's not very well known these days. He was in his time as an English writer who wrote some absolutely brilliant stories, and one of my favourites is The Stone Cage, which is a retelling of Rapunzel, but from the point of view of the witch's cat.
Oh.
So the witch's cat is the narrator of the story. It's a fantastic. It's one of my favorites. He's written many very good ones. Dinah Wynne Jones, of course. I mean, she's a huge influence. Robin McKinley, particularly for the dogs, I think. The dogs are very important in Frog Kisser. Ardent is one of the main characters, Ardent, the royal dog. T.H. White. I think in a way, The Sword and the Stone was a very big influence on this. And the other person who got left out of the proof, but I think is in the book, I hope, was James Thurber and the 13 Clocks. And certainly, and I realised that in retrospect, my Duke Richard, the sorcerer, owes something definitely to the Duke of Coffin Castle in the 13 Clocks. So, once again, I guess, I'm trying to write the sort of children's book that I loved as a child and still love. All of those authors I still read and reread. And so that's where it came from. So,
I'm going to take that as a reading list because so many of the authors you mentioned are amongst my absolute favourites. Like, I still reread Robin McKinley and Dinah Wynne Jones books frequently.
Good. So you should.
And it happens with every book that you write seems to, like, I've discussed it with you before in previous ones, Georgette Heyer, P.G. Woodhouse. Like, I really love the way you're able to bring together all these influences and create something totally new that brings to mind these things but is different.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad it works like that as opposed to, this is totally stolen from XYZ. Synthesized, I hope. Synthesized and inspired by.
Yeah, it's like it has this nostalgic feel of things you've loved from elsewhere, but it's a brand new thing.
Oh,
and it's
thank
like,
you.
And I think definitely bringing the characters that you love together. Like,
and
I,
to me, that really enhances my love of something. Like,
yeah,
it's
exactly.
rare that I find that I love something that's completely unlike anything I've ever experienced before.
Well,
like,
it's very hard to do that, of course, to be totally unlike anything that's come before. But I do like to think of myself as very much writing in a tradition and being part of that big sort of family tree. I like being a little green shoot off this this tree of fantastic writers that have gone before. So it's a wonderful thing to be part of that. and now I've been doing it for a long time, I'm also very pleased when younger writers say that I'm an influence on them. So, woohoo, keeps going, you know. So that's also very good.
To circle back to the dogs.
The dogs, yes.
Because I love the dogs in this, and there's a particular, like, you know when random little things, like it's a small detail in a book, but it appeals to your sense of humour so much that you just don't, it's the thing that really sticks, is when right near the beginning you're explaining how dogs are so sure of their own identity that they can't be transformed into other things, except for one time when it happened. And then the dog just continued to behave like a dog, even though it had been transformed into, I think it was a goose or something.
Yeah, something like that. And then
into
hunting.
A chicken.
Into a chicken. And then he went hunting, brought down an animal and turned back into a dog. And I was just like, that is so great. Because and I think anyone who's ever owned a dog or seen a dog kind of just knows that sort of intrinsic dogness. That's just...
Oh, yeah.
They are very certain of their own identities.
To the point where, you know, you get the feeling they just assume everyone else is a dog as well.
Yeah. Oh,
we're all just weird-looking dogs.
I do love dogs, and that was a big part of the book.
And you mentioned in the dedication a couple of dogs. Do they inspire Ardent?
Funnily enough, and this did worry me slightly, because when I was writing The Keys to the Kingdom, and my main character, Arthur, was an asthmatic, because I had asthma as a child, and then I just started writing Mr. Munda and I started getting asthma again. I thought, I've sort of brought it on myself by writing. I'm sure I didn't, because in actual fact it's very common to childhood asthma to come back as an adult. But once again, in Frog Kiss, I'd actually started writing it, and I'd written about 4 or 5 chapters, so Ardent is very much there and in the book. And we had the opportunity to adopt a dog called Sam, and Sam came bounding in, and he basically was Ardent from the book. And I thought, I've created him. I better be careful. But then I thought, I also have written many books where all kinds of hideous things happen which have not occurred. So fortunately, obviously, only perhaps, you know, some things have become real. So yeah, I've been writing about Ardent, and then we had the chance to adopt this dog, Sam, who's a beautiful Labrador, who of course we adopted. I mean, he came just for a weekend tryout, and on the Sunday we went and bought him a bed. You know, he wasn't going back. So he's still with us, luckily. So
I could definitely only picture Labradors. Because just that energy level, like Labrador under myself, I'm like, that's such a Labrador thing to do.
So yes, there's a very, and the fixation on food as well, of course.
Which Anya kind of has as well.
I've got on my notes here, Gerald the Herald with 3 exclamation points and 3 love hearts.
Yep.
So it's not really a question. It's more like...
I just want to talk about the Gerald the Herald.
I loved how, I don't want to, it's delicate to get around details in the book
without,
because you don't want to spoil
plots,
it and stuff,
yeah.
But the Gerald the Herald idea, to me, just reminded me of like things like, I'm trying to think of a good example of this, but like say in the Shrek movies where they take like a modern convenience like the internet or newspapers and stuff and then put it into
a sort
very
of medieval
terrible.
Twist.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Yeah.
I love it so much. It's really,
that
really
one that
good.
Comes at the sort of the end reminds me of a journalist and, you know, sitting there scribbling his notes.
Oh, so good. That's the last one's the best one.
Yeah.
Last one's the good one.
Yeah.
they're all fun. I mean, and again, I have no idea where that came from. I mean, I wrote the first Gerald the Herald scene, and he spoke in headlines, and that was it. And then for some reason the next one just cropped up, and I thought, how would he get from there to there? Oh, it's another one.
I was going to say, why multiple?
You know,
so
you know,
good.
It's sometimes the requirements of plot give you good ideas, or the restrictions of trying to keep things real mean you have to
think
outside the box, and good things happen. Yeah. So
I also really loved the Good Wizard character.
I like the Good Wizard too.
Yeah, and I'm avoiding saying anything more than that, but
Yeah.
That character.
I like
great.
The retired good wizard as well.
Yes.
So.
Yes. And especially the way that that played on certain fairy tales.
Yeah.
Characters.
Well,
yeah.
I'm going to mix up various things there, yeah. which I like. I like to do. It's just fun.
Oh,
when it works,
so
it's a lot
fun.
Of fun. Yeah.
It's just a delightful book to read. And
I actually would laugh out loud and cackle to myself and think, oh, hopefully people don't think I'm crazy or something. And it was definitely the little things. I remember right at near the end and someone had gone to count, I think was it the weasels or something, and they'd come back to report to Anya and they said, oh, we think there's 12, maybe 13, because that the one of the women's changed hats, so she might have been counted twice. Like things like that. Because I'm like, that's something that would happen. It's just so relatable in a way. And
I'm a great believer in small details, particularly, I guess, in all fiction, but particularly in fantasy, creating believable fantasy. It's all about small details.
Mm.
The small details build up to make things feel real. So I'm thank you. I'm glad you noticed these things, because that's part of making a believable fantasy, even when it's a funny one. Yeah.
And it's interesting to hear you say that, because that is the effect of it. When you're reading it, you're just charmed. You're like,
yeah.
Oh, that's adorable. Or
I
like,
hope so.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah.
But you don't realise that it's
all
sinking
adding up.
You into this story.
It's all,
and
it's all adding
the world.
Up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very deftly done.
Thank you.
Can we discuss what's up next for you?
Sure. Well, my next book, which is out in October, is co-written with my friend Sean Williams, who I wrote the Trouble Twisters series with. Sean is actually in Antarctica at the moment.
Wow.
He's an author in residence at Casey Base for the next 2 weeks. So
awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Job back.
Yeah, so he's a long way away, dressed in very warm clothes, I hope. and the next book we're doing together is a book called Have Sword, Will Travel.
Love that title.
As I do, and again, I can't believe no one's ever done it. I couldn't believe no one had ever used Frog Kisser as a title either, but I researched it and
it's not
there you go.
There.
And there's no, yep, so well, there is now, or will be very, very soon. So Have Sword, Will Travel, which is the beginning of a new series. It's a children's fantasy. It's set in a kind of a medieval-ish, sort of Anglo-Saxon-ish world where a miller's boy and a herbalist's daughter find a sword in the bottom of their drying up river, and it leads them on all kinds of adventures. A talking sword.
Oh, excellent.
So a slightly confused talking sword. Not quite sure why it's been at the bottom of the river for a long time. So there's talking swords and dragons and lots of good stuff, and it's an adventure. It's an adventure story. It's a fantasy adventure.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's
fun. And that's later this year.
That's October. Yeah.
October.
And I'm currently working on a new big fantasy book, which is not an Old Kingdom book. So it's not set in the Old Kingdom. It's a completely new fantasy set in a kind of 17th century, alternate 17th century sort of Three Musketeerish kind of world.
Ooh.
With angelic magic.
That sounds very intriguing. Mm. Now, I just remembered that you mentioned that.
Did
previously,
I? I did.
Like, and I'd forgotten that was coming.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. You get
so
excited again.
Yeah.
I am. I'm excited again. I'm like,
I don't like talking very much about things in progress, so it's hard to get excited about something where I won't tell you anything about it, so little. Yeah.
Oh, I think that last time you came in to speak to us,
Wasn't that long ago. It was only October
or
September. Or,
and I was overwhelmed by this was coming so quickly.
I remember your reaction as well.
February.
Well, considering usually I'm sort of 2 years behind schedule at least, it's a rare period of lots of Garth Nix books.
Oh, that is
year.
Yeah. Garth, thank you so much for coming in today.
It's a pleasure.
It's always so great to see you, and I'm actually like, I forgot to ask you one question. Can
sure.
I?
Sure. Yeah. Quick, let's backtrack.
I was going to wrap it up, but I'm thinking, I just wanted to ask, while this is a very complete story and, standalone, it seems as though there's possibly scope for Anya's story to continue, or like maybe the Good Wizard story to continue, mm-hmm. or something like that. Is that actually a possibility maybe down the line after all these other amazing books that you've got coming out.
What's next for the Frog Kisser?
Exactly, that's how it finished. I was like, it must be more.
I think, I have notes and some ideas, so I think there's very likely I will do something. When I have the right story forms in my head, I think it's very likely. I love writing this book. I love writing all my books, but this was a particularly lovable one. So I think, yeah, very likely I'll do some more.
That is incredibly good to hear.
Yep, we're definitely excited.
Good.
So yes, as Sarah was saying, thank you so much for coming in. It's always a pleasure to have you. And
podcast listeners, you can get Frog Kisser and all of Garth's books at booktopia.com.au.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.